This is the Shift Podcast.
Today on the Shift Daily Podcast, music, motorcycles, and married to a nurse. Jason McCoy has had a wild year, dropping new music with Canadian country stars, the Roadhammers. That is his other band, away from his solo career. They're fantastic. It's good party tunes. While also supporting his family as she works as a part-time nurse and his kids who are trying to be raised through COVID. He shares his story with us here on The Shift. Greg Fish is back to dive into the world of weird things and the ways that anti-vax rhetoric is impacting the fight against COVID-19. We also talk about misinformation and kind of a global look at the pandemic. And is it even possible to sort of nip this and take care of it? On the International Dispatch with Sir Christopher Gilbert, Chris tells us about the most boring man in the world of sports, plus news that raises more questions than answers. It's time for the International Dispatch with Sir Christopher Gilbert.
Welcome to the International Dispatch from our world citizen. Live from Japan, New Zealand's Chris Gilbert.
Chris, since you've escaped Canada, is pumpkin spice a thing in Japan?
Pumpkin spice? Oh, that's a great question. I can tell you that Starbucks is a huge thing in Japan. They love Starbucks here. Like, adore really? Starbucks. Yeah, so I imagine that like things like Christmas are imported, obviously. Imported occasion. So, you know, like at Christmas time, that kind of puts a Japanese spin on it. It's very much a time for making out, literally, like making out with people, and for making babies and for eating chicken. But Halloween and autumn is, you know, the leaves turn here a lot. You know, there's a lot of trees that you know, Japan is very famous for its autumn leaves. So it's very easy for the Japanese, I think, to understand the color orange to associate it with this time of year. And pumpkins, they understand pumpkins. And culturally, I mean, I don't mean they understand the concept of a pumpkin. I mean, like, they know about Halloween and jack-o'-lanterns and stuff. So I think pumpkin spice kind of goes along with that a little bit. Hmm. Yeah, I would say yes is my answer.
I didn't think, you know, because Japan's been around for a long time, that there was much of a Thanksgiving, you know?
No, there's not. I mean, there's no Thanksgiving here. But, like, I do think these things are kind of just brought over by, you know, marketers and stuff like that. But I do think it's relatively new. I think I encountered myself pumpkin spice really for the first time when I lived in Vancouver. Hmm. Like, you guys love your pumpkin spice over there. Wow.
I don't, but yes, you are correct. So if you don't know Sir Christopher Gilbert, potato chip Gilbert. That's his song for his cat that doesn't exist. Chris here was one of the Shift Head members on the show, the show producer. And then he's a Kiwi who went to Japan, then came here to Canada, and then said, enough of that, and went back to Japan, and still is kind of here. So I guess that's kind of the whole story of all of it.
I can't cut that last string. You know what I mean? I just,
I know.
I've got to stay tied somehow. You know.
You love the Canadians.
The Canadians took my driver's license. So this is a personal gripe for me. But I only today ordered a replacement of my New Zealand driver's license, because when I turned my New Zealand driver's license into a Canadian driver's license, they took my New Zealand driver's license, which I felt. I'm still offended by it. You have no right to take my driver's license, even though you gave me one to drive in the wrong side of the road, the side of the road that you drive on.
Is the right side of the road in New Zealand?
It's the left. We're you know, Australasian. Left.
Really?
All the way. Yeah.
Really? Japan, and it's too. Like that in Japan too, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so
right.
So maybe that's why you feel home there.
I feel very much at home. I love watching the Americans and the Canadians having to sit driving tests here. It's a thing of beauty for me, whereas I can just change my license straight around. And, you know, I'm watching, you know, Canadians and Americans being like, ooh, what's this about? You know, as they drive around, you know, the little and the toy cars and the back there for their driver's license. But I digress.
Do you walk on the wrong side when you were in Canada? Would you walk on the wrong side of the mall or the sidewalk and try to pass people on the left? I know, it's a mouthful.
I mean, do you guys walk on the right over there? I can't remember.
Well, typically in a shopping mall, you see people, they tend to go the same way as they would on a road. Except for the families that walk six across really slowly talking to each other like they've never hung out before. You did just hang out before. You were in the same house. You took three cars to the mall, and now you're walking that wide, slowly meandering, still talking to each other in the mall. That was my rant.
I was going to say, like, I think most people in malls don't actually walk on any given side. They walk looking at their phones, bumping into things head first. But like, I do find it difficult here because here you're meant to walk on the left and you're meant to walk, cycle on the left, same way you drive. But actually, this is a perfect segue because lots of foreigners here like to complain because people here just walk and cycle everywhere. It's Tokyo, it's chaos, baby. You know, it's like people are walking towards you, they're cycling towards you, they're pushing things towards you. And, you know, you get a lot of British guys who come over here being like, oh, well, you know, like you're meant to walk on the left side of the road. And I don't know why you're walking towards me, which is perfect because my first story tonight is actually about a complaining British man who should be quiet.
Right, then.
Yeah. Do you want to hear about it?
I do. Would you tell me about it?
Okay. Yeah, I'll tell you about it. Sure. I wasn't sure where we were going with that, Shane, but I'll jump right in.
Oh yeah, no, I was good. I was right. I was thinking back of my my Downton Abbey show that I'm addicted to.
Are you? Wait. You're addicted to Downton Abbey?
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I've fallen in love with it. I don't know what happened. I can't stop watching it.
No, that's bleak. We gotta save Shane.
Oh, I know, but it's great though. I love it. I couldn't be happier.
Oh my God. Can you at least like segue to something else? Like instead of Downton Abbey, like the Great British Bake Off or something.
I love the Great British Bake Off too, though.
Yeah, me too. I love Noel Fielding. Like Noel Fielding, Noel Fielding, just, you know, for the listeners is aren't perverted and watch the Great British Bake Off. He's one of the hosts. And someone once asked him on the show, oh, do you do much baking at home, Noel? And Noel's like, no, baking's for losers. And I was immediately in love with him. That's why I love the Great British Bake Off. I'm not talking about Noel Fielding. I'm talking about Andrew Baron Murray, Andy Murray, the 34-year-old man called Andrew who still calls himself Andy. That's the first problem with Andrew Murray, is he refers to himself as Andy still professionally. He recently lost his first US Open match against, I can get this right, Stefanos Tsitsipas. I don't know if I got that right or not, but I did my best, everyone. It was a really, did you guys know about this game? It went on for like 5 hours. It was really intense.
No.
Murray lost. The score was like 2-6, 7-6, 3-6, 6-3, 6-4. So it was a 5-set game. And in the fifth set, you know, it went on for quite a while. Tsitsipas had to, you know, go do, nature was calling. It was like hour four and a half at that point. So he, went to, use the facilities and, for a bathroom break and, on court, Andy Murray wasn't so happy about it. This is what Andy Murray had to say.
I feel it influenced the outcome of the match. Not necessarily, I'm not saying I necessarily win that match for sure, but it had influence on what was happening after those breaks. And, you know, I rate him a lot. I think he's a brilliant player and I think he's great for the game. But I have zero time for that stuff at all. And I lost respect for him.
Ooh.
That was going to be the second club I wanted to play because I wanted to talk about how boring Andy Murray is off the back of that. But we can talk about that now. How boring is Andy Murray, first of all?
That's like, so boring. My goodness. I can't believe that.
Boring. Like, I'm sorry. All I heard was blah, 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 blah. And like, how can you do a whole press conference like that?
Guys.
With that tone of voice?
We found the British equivalent of a Canadian hockey player giving an interview.
Really?
Says nothing.
That's it right there. You know, a Canadian hockey player gets interviewed, it's, you know, how do you think the game is going? And they'll always answer, we're getting pucks in deep and we just got to hit the forecheck a little bit harder. And we're having
the team's been working hard there. You know, coaches got some new systems.
Oh,
that's it. This is it.
It's like I relate to this. All Blacks then. Because the coach of the All Blacks, we used to have a coach called Steve Hansen, who was the previous coach of the New Zealand rugby team. And he always did that. He was like, oh, yeah, you know, it's a game of two halves and we kick the ball in deep. But, you know, the other team, they fought back pretty hard. And at the end of the day, boys did a good job. And he would drawl on like that for probably, you know, like I reckon he sucked 2 or 3 years off most sports journalists' lives.
It was awful to listen to. Since you're talking about sports and strange sports, I'll toss this your way. I've been recently been introduced to Gaelic football. You familiar with that?
I mean, I'm familiar with the two words independent of each other.
Yeah. So Gaelic football is very similar to rugby, except it's not like an oblong rugby ball. It's more like a volleyball.
What?
It's huge in Ireland. Yeah. It's like the thing. It is. Yeah, it's amazing. It's just watching, and it's the crowds and the yelling. It's all the same excitement, and guys crashing into each other with no helmets.
This sounds awesome. This sounds like somewhere like, because Aussie rules is kind of like a mixture of rugby and soccer. This looks like one of the most difficult things about playing rugby. I don't know if you guys have ever played rugby. Is that the shape of the ball? It bounces in a really odd way. It's a really unpredictable ball. If you've ever tried to like bounce a rugby ball, like a basketball, it's near impossible. So I imagine having the round ball, you know, kind of like makes it a little bit easier to control. But I'm just looking at a photo of it now. It kind of looks like, yeah, they're playing rugby with a volleyball.
It's kind of like playing rugby with some differences, nuances. I do know this. The finals are coming up September 11th, Croke Park in Dublin, Tyrone versus Mayo. That's from my buddy Julie. If you're into the Gaelic football, total sidebar there, but still fascinating.
You're not going to get it on the 6 p.m. news. You got to get this info from Shane. You know, it's the only source for this stuff. Yeah, you know,
that's
all
true.
The Gaelic football fans out there.
We're here to support the Gaelic football in Canada.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm going to. You know what? I'm going to be actually just complete tangent again. This is all over the place tonight. But have you been watching the Paralympics?
I've been watching the highlights of the Paralympics. I find it's absolutely remarkable what some of those people do. Oh my goodness.
Doesn't it make you feel terrible about yourself? Like, what am I doing with my life? Like, there's a guy playing table tennis who has no arms. And I'm just, you know, like on my phone, like playing Angry Birds in the year 2021, which is probably the most depressing game you can play in the year 2021. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm still doing this. You know, amazing.
Yep. I was going to say, I don't know what it's called, but it's one of the athletics track and field ones where the folks are, they're kind of hand pedaling.
Yeah.
And they've got the wheels in the back. And I don't know if it's no use of the legs or no legs or whatever it is, but there's no support from the legs. So you're hand pedaling kind of on a bike. And like these people are just fierce.
Machines.
And they're just machines and powerful, and they're going ridiculously hard. Like 110% as an example does not describe how hard these people are working. And then they finish it and they smile and they are the happiest humans that you've ever seen in your life. That's the payoff of the Paralympics is
the Paralympics is awesome. It is so cool. I'm sorry. It's so much better than the Olympics. The Olympics is boring. Who wants to see that? No one wants to see that. You know, like it makes you feel terrible, you know, looking at these people. Paralympics is inspiring. Like, I watched one called the other day called Goalball, where it's like the three people, it's kind of like handball, but it's three people at either end, and like they're just trying to throw a ball down the court into a net at the other end. And you have to have complete silence because the defending team has to hear not only which direction the ball is going, but where in the air it is, like the bounce. You know, they had to listen for the bounce so they can block it. And it's just, you know, like the ability to hear is incredible. You know, I'm still learning to listen to my girlfriend. You know, I'm still trying to be like, I'm still trying to be like a person that's not like, wait, no, I want to talk. You know, and these people can listen to like this ball going across the room.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So amazing. What's not amazing, just to sum this up, what's not amazing and should be cancelled, I'm canceling him right now, is Andy Murray. Because he is, first of all, can I just say, a little bit controversial, But white British guys, be quiet. You've had your time. You know, like, you've had the stage for 400 years. The only time I want to hear a white British guy complaining is if it's someone from Wales or Scotland complaining that they are part of Britain. That's what I want to hear. The rest of the complaints, go away. Andy Murray is complaining that his opponent took too long in the bathroom. Brendan, can we? This is on court. This other clip. Can we hear the other clip real quickly?
Well, here's the thing. We only got the one clip from you with boring Andy. No. That's why I was confused earlier when you were like,
"Isn't
this
the bathroom break?" The other one.
This is the bathroom break.
Is it the bathroom break clip?
It's the bathroom break. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Hit it.
Okay. You have
good team meeting. Well done.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I'll go back to being quiet here.
At the end of the fourth, but whatever he did.
For 20 minutes every time. Oh, how long do you think it was? And the toilet's right there. What's he doing? What's he doing in there? It's never once taken me that long to go to the toilet, ever. But it's right there.
It was 8 minutes. He was in the toilet for 8 minutes. It's not that long. And Andy Murray's like, I've never been in the toilet. I'm just like, you've never been in the toilet for 8 minutes before? Really? Like, you're that quick at pooping? I don't think so. Like, no, 8 minutes is a perfectly reasonable amount of time to be in the toilet. And Andy Murray, who is 34 years old and still calls himself Andy instead of Andrew, as he should, is on court complaining. Let us not forget Naomi Osaka, when she beat Coco Gauff in the US Open in 2019, had, like, the courtesy and the elevation to share the post-match interview with her and get on court and do it together as a team. And this whining little jerk is just like, he's been pooping for too long in the bathroom. It's putting me off my game. Well, like, I'm sorry, if you were a better tennis player, you wouldn't let someone pooping affect you. That's it. I'm done with Andy Murray. He's canceled. He's gone.
I don't understand how you could take a poop break in the middle of a tennis match, but all right.
Well, that's why you're not a pro athlete, Shane.
Oh, that's among many reasons. Among many reasons. We got a couple of minutes here. Did you, which gives you got a couple more ideas? Where do you want to go?
Okay. I'll give you guys the option. People want Yu-Gi-Oh! To be in the Olympics. Thieves.
I like the questions one.
You want the, what one do you like?
Yeah, I like the questions. The more the news that raises more questions than answers. I like that list.
Yeah, let's do the Belgium one, because I gave Shane in my debrief today, or my brief, just some stories that raise more questions than they answer.
And thank you for getting that right, by the way. Most people get brief and debrief wrong. That's awesome. Thank you for nailing that.
No, you're well. I mean, I'm here to correct the record on all things, including whining British people. But brief. Debrief comes afterwards. Thieves attempt to steal a Monet from the Dutch Museum, but they drop it mid-escape. It sounds fairly straightforward. I'm sure this new story is going to explain. This is from Smithsonian.com. Yeah. So the story reads, on Sunday morning, two armed robbers attempted to steal a Monet painting from the Dutch Museum. They didn't get far as they tried to escape. A quick thinking bystander intervened. I'm sure we're going to hear what happened. One of the thieves dropped the Monet in the ensuing scuffle. Then the Dutch broadcaster reports they fled the scene on a black motorbike. Okay, these are armed robbers, which means, you know, either they have a gun or some kind of sword. And nobody was hurt. The painting has since been safely restored to its home in the Zands Museum in the city of Zaandam, according to a statement. Witnesses heard screaming and said that one of the thieves fired shots at least once during the altercation. Authorities recovered the abandoned getaway motorcycle nearby and are still searching for the suspects. The story goes on for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 more paragraphs, which is all just a biography of Claude Monet.
So, okay. First of all, I don't know how many art thieves carry swords, like you have quoted in this. But that's really the question for me is, who robs an art gallery with a painting and your only getaway vehicle is a motorcycle? That sounds like a recipe for disaster. Trying to get away on the street, you'd be like a sail.
Yeah, no, somebody has, like, I feel like these two people were probably not Belgian, because if they were Belgian, they'd probably be better at stealing paintings. These are people who have watched movies like that one with Sean Connery and the other, not the, the American lady with the black hair that used to be married. Oh, what's her name? She has three names. Catherine Zeta-Jones. Yeah, I feel like they've watched that one, and I feel like they've watched Ronin, and they've been like, cool, I can do that. But
I feel like we're hearing what goes on inside Sir Christopher's head when he's thinking.
I give way too much away. But the other thing that's happening inside my head is you're quite right. Like, they try to steal a painting, armed, in the middle of the day, it sounds like, because there's other people there as bystanders.
Yeah.
And but the thing is that they say that as they tried to escape, a quick-thinking bystander intervened. Does not say at all what happened, which is by far the most interesting part of the story, which is how, like, some old man, I imagine, like, an old, like, Belgian man in, like, a cheese cutter hat with, like, you know, three different shades of brown plaid, you know, like a suit and a cane. And he just, like, whips his cane out and he trips the guys up, and the painting goes comically flying through the air but lands back on its hook on the wall. That's what I imagine happening, but this story does not say actually at all what happens. It just said someone intervened, there was a scuffle, and some witnesses heard screaming, and that's it. That's all we know. Like, come on. It's a paint thievery. Oh my god.
It's a paint thievery.
It's a painting thief.
That's great.
Give me details.
I love it. It's fantastic. Sir Christopher Gilbert, live from Tokyo, Japan, here with the International Dispatch. Chris, thank you, brother. It's great to see your face. You look great.
Yeah, no, it's good to see you guys, too. I have great lighting tonight, so I hope you enjoyed it. You can't see me at home, but I look fantastic. Have a lovely week.
This is the Shift Podcast. Rolling with the outlaw crowd. Drink all the whiskey, smoke all the smoke like a long-haired band of desperados. We find a little small town.
New seasons, new music, maybe a new life that allows us to, I don't want to say new life without a pandemic, a new life that allows us to go to concerts through a pandemic. All of these things are hopeful. We were looking at new music, and there's a little country group of fellas that they're called the Roadhammers.
Yeah.
They have new music out. And Jason McCoy is here. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being here and spending some time. It's nice to see your face again. It's probably been 2 years, dude, since we've been able to visit.
It's been a couple of years, man. You see in the face all these things on Zoom. I would have got cleaned up. I just finished cutting my mom's grass, so doing some domestic duties here.
That's good. I got to tell a story about Jason. I remember one of the first times I was introduced. So my buddy Jody Seeley has done work with Jason before. I went to school with Jody. She's an amazing human, announcer, had an amazing radio career too. And so Jody had introduced us and said, okay, well, here's Jason's phone number to connect to talk about, you know, some of the Christmas show stuff. And I remember phoning your house. And it was literally your house. Like, it wasn't your phone. It wasn't your cell phone. And there was dogs barking. You're just, hello.
And Buddy was like, Luna. Yeah, man.
Yeah. And I was like, is this like, Jason, did I just phone your house? You're like, oh, yeah, this is my phone. Sure. Real life, man.
We're pretty laid back here at the old ranch. But yeah, you know what? It's good. Actually, we live, about an hour and a half north of Toronto. We're up just north of Barrie and have a farm out here, and it's pretty relaxed, actually. Yeah. A couple of dogs, a couple of kids, some mud and dirt to play around in. It's pretty good.
So how's it been for the McCoy fam jam through the last couple of years? You guys been hanging on all right?
Yeah, actually, you know, relatively speaking, I mean, I've been very lucky. I do a radio gig, so that's been a constant for me. Been writing with the guys, and, you know, with the new release of the EP, things are starting to come on board with more shows and stuff. But my wife is also a nurse. She's an ER nurse. So we all know, you know, frontline workers, what that's look like for them.
Yeah.
She's been pretty busy. But the kids, it's a different story. You know, they're doing great, but maybe a little too good. Through the whole pandemic, they really enjoyed working online. Mm-hmm. And as we start to look toward next month where they go back to school, there's a little reluctance because there's not a whole lot of motivation. There's a little bit of social interaction that they miss. But for the most part, like my daughter, she's in high school. She's 15. She wants to be around her friends, right? But my son, he's just turned 12. And as soon as the pandemic hit, I mean, he got to spend time on his dirt bike, hang with the dogs, and go online for a little bit of time. It was pretty good.
Pretty good life, yeah.
But, you know, for a lot of folks, it just it certainly wasn't great and hasn't been great. We got to remember that as we pull out of this. There's a lot of people who took big hits in this, restaurant owners and entertainers, yeah. Musicians, you know, your journey musicians. Yeah. It's been a very painful time.
Let me ask you the husband question. Your bride is a big part of your life. You've shared that with me before, you know, mm-hmm. sort of the partner in crime, the peas to your carrots. and
carrots is great.
Being the husband and watching your wife come home on those tough days, I mean, how's that? Has that been difficult, or has that been, you know, does it solidify things?
Yeah, and she's not even full time, you know, like so it's to see what she goes through, but she comes home and laments how tough it is for those who are full time. I mean, and she, you know, she does 12-hour shifts, which inevitably turn into 13, 14s. But when she tells me the stories, or was telling me the stories in the thick of it, and they're a small hospital, keep in mind, up in Midland, Ontario, but they're very busy. The workload on top of the workload, right? So you got your standard workload, and then you've got the COVID concern. I'm a radio. I'm just telling silly jokes on the radio all day, or writing songs during the day. You know, it's not life and death stuff. So when you see somebody who, I think nurses and frontline workers are chronically underpaid when you look at a lot of other sectors, but that's another topic. When you think of all the things they have to go in and do and ungown, gown, and then all the stress of the regular caseload, it's almost insurmountable. No wonder there's been a lot of people who have taken early retirement, understandably so.
Yep.
A lot of younger people, too, that we see, and not just through her imparting this, but we've seen it a lot in healthcare where they're putting lifestyle over job security. So they're yep. saying, you know what, I'm going to work 3 days a week. I'm going to work 4 days a week, something like this, as opposed to, you know, I'll do anything to keep that position, because they realize they have to have life balance. So yep. it's hard to keep that healthcare system rolling along that way.
Yeah. And it might be a good lesson for some of us who just grinded it out when we were younger too. There could be lessons to be learned there as well, which is interesting. So I have to pass this on to you, Jason McCoy, because my audience, the shift heads, have been very clear to me about this, is that when it comes to hospital workers and all that stuff, yes, so important, life and death. The audience folks and the people that do listen to you on the radio, they do create the distinction of the difference between trying to live and being alive. And your music will do that. Your hosting will do that, will create aliveness versus just trying to live. And that is a gift that can't be forgotten. And that I've learned that from my audience, and I use that as a reminder for you and what you do, and ask you about the Roadhammers and what you guys have been up to.
Well, you know, we've been writing for this EP. It's been a long time coming, but it's finally here, just released last week. And, you know, it's kind of surreal, because when you would release a record during quote unquote normal times, you'd be ramping up to it, going around visiting radio stations, visiting TV stations, all that stuff. But everything's in the box right now, right? Everything's Zoom and doing exactly what we're doing here. So you're literally flying around the world just by opening your computer, just talking to Australia, you know, before this, talking to you. And then tomorrow we're talking to some folks out west. And so it's just, it's a very odd thing. But it's also very good, too, because before the pandemic, co-writing over Zoom was kind of a weird thing. It was like, well, we'll wait till you're in Nashville. Wait till you come into town, we'll write. Now it's become the norm, and it actually helps you expand your horizons a little bit. So I can write with a pop rock dude in Britain, and then I can write with a country guy in Nashville. And, you know, you can do all these things day to day without traveling. Yeah. And it really helps. It doesn't replace in person. It augments it in some ways. And in other ways, it may be the only way you can do it, you know. But it's expedited everybody embracing this technology in the creative world. And I think that's good.
It is good. What we invest in our personal lives, I think, has shifted what we care about. Walking, for me, is something that I could have cared less about, but it's become incredibly important to me. I've, through the course of this show, there's a guest we just had on a week ago or so, and he records quiet places. He takes a stand for quiet parks, just no noise pollution, places in the world that have no noise pollution. And then he goes there and records.
I hope this is quiet enough here, because I just realized as I started, I have somebody putting in what I think is a pool back there, or they're destroying one.
It sounds big, but it's fine. We can hear you okay.
You can hear it?
It's real life. Oh, we're good. Yeah, I can hear some thumping and clanking.
It is real life.
But you know, we look at these things and it starts to change because we've been more present to different conversations. Ride for Dad's been a big thing for you for a while now. How's that going?
Well, it's going good, but there are some struggles, obviously. So Ride for Dad is a ride that happens at different chapters right across Canada. Ridefordad.ca, if you haven't checked it out. But it was started by two fellas, Gary and Byron, in Ottawa. And basically they started it many, many years ago. I've been involved 14 years now, but just a handful of years as national ambassador. And really it's to raise money and awareness and for awareness and research for prostate cancer. So just as breast cancer seemed to have this taboo-ness around it for many, many years until we started having runs and opening the discussion and making sure that women got checked early because it saved lives, same thing goes for prostate cancer. And it is one of those cancers that if caught early, you can prolong a life, you can save a life, and you can go on, remain, have a very healthy healthy life beyond that. So it was something that was just a natural fit for me. Big motorcycle fan, obviously. Anything with wheels, I mean, that's the Road Hammers mantra. But I was asked to join the local chapter up here in Orillia just by a friend, Colin, who's since passed. But I just did it because it was fun. And then my dad contracted prostate cancer 10 years ago, and he caught it early. Early detection and screening, and was saved from that. So it literally saved my dad, the fact that we were opening that conversation. And then the money raised has dropped those treatments down from, I forget what it was, like 35 shots of radiation down to like 5 now. It's so non-invasive now. It's just amazing what they've done. And the dollars that are raised in each of these chapters' communities stay in those communities. So the reason I became so passionate about it, went from just, you know, kind of riding in it to becoming a national spokesman, is every year they would have a check go out and it would go to these researchers. And a lot of times when you join a charity or give to a charity, you're pretty sure it's going to a good thing. You're not really sure where. It's kind of a faceless thing, you know?
Yep, totally.
Well, every year they would bring the researchers whom they'd given the check to the year before up to our ride. And these doctors, not only the researchers, but the care providers, all these people would come up, and before we go on the ride, we'd have like 700 bikes there. And they would say, I'm taking this check today. I want you to know I got one of these last year, and here's what we've done. We've made this advance. We've done this. We've cut treatments down from X amount to this amount. And it's a real transparent and interactive thing. It's unlike anything else I've ever seen in my life. And their only mission is early detection, spread the word, save lives.
It's a beautiful thing. It's present in my family on both sides, my mother and my father's side. And my doctor said to me, get checked early. I was hesitant, of course, as you are. Yeah. My doctor was amazing. And I started getting my inspection done. And yeah. And I did. I started going for the annuals. And you know what? It's a breeze to a point where when one of my friends says, really? Like you went for the thing, huh? It's like, yeah, dude, like you don't even know, like it's you're done and you're on your way out the door and you get the thumbs up if you excuse the pun.
Well, here's the thing, it's not a digital exam anymore, so it has nothing to do with fingers and all that kind of stuff. It's just a urine test. They check the PSA level. It's a prostate specific antigen present in the urine, and elevations in certain hormones will tell them that, hey, there could be a problem here. And then they'll go in and they'll do an MRI or things like this that they need to do. But it's a urine test. It's nothing. So what is there to stop anybody from getting tested? So the fact that they've been able to come this far and testing is that non-invasive, it's like, hey, pee in a cup, save your life.
I pee almost every day.
I do almost every day too. Sometimes about 5 times a night, but regardless.
Depending on the beer.
It's all you have to do. And it's simply that easy. So I'm very passionate about it because I've seen it save lives. I've seen it change lives. And all we can do is continue to increase the research and the awareness. It's the awareness. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. Go get checked.
Very well said. Love it. Jason McCoy. And I got to ask, I mean, you do like to ride a motorcycle. There is many pictures of you on motorcycles on the internet. In fact, there probably is as many of you on motorcycles as there with a guitar and on stage. So just tell us about your motorbike. And because, I mean, all the bikers will be like, Shane, you didn't ask him about what to ride.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, I've worked with Triumph Motorcycles for years now. They've provided bikes for me when we do the ride. Right now, it's Ride Alone Together, by the way. So ridefordad.ca. You get pledges. You can sponsor riders. It's all, Ride Alone Together, just like it sounds. But we can't wait for the day we can get back and have all the riders together. But Triumph has supplied me with bikes through the years, and they've been fantastic. But the ride's open to all bikes, and that's what we see there. I've had a Can-Am Spyder before. There's debate whether it's different. I had one for 2 years. It was provided for me just to try, and
you kept it for 2 years.
I kept it for 2 years. Well, they're fun. They're really great. Here's the thing I found about the Can-Am Spyder: the acceleration is unparalleled on any bike. It's like,
really.
You know, when you hop on like a big snowmobile and it's just like, whoa, here we go. It's Can-Am, right? I mean, it's just insane amount of torque. The turning, if you're a bike guy, you're not going to be as happy if you're expecting it to be a bike. Because when you don't lean into the corner, although there is that lean to it, right? It's got the swing arms and stuff will let you lean into the corner. But it's more like turning a snowmobile. So there's a bit of table topping to it, but it's the comfort of the red light. I mean, I have my kids on all the time with me, and you're just sitting there and you got your feet up, and it's really a chill thing, but it's got insane amount of torque. The other bikes I've had is a lot of the Bonneville, which has been great. I love the styling of it. The Scrambler, they're great. The Speed Triple, which is off the hook. But personally, I have an old Sportster, it's a 94. It was last year they had a chain. So it was the half year before they went to belt. It's just a 4-speed, and it's great. But that's my wife's bike right now, because I've got a it's a Roadhammer themed chopper. So this is we did a TV show like when they were doing West Coast Choppers, Orange County Choppers, and we had this. It's 10 feet long. It's called a Big Bear Athena. So it's one of my favorite look. If you're into choppers, it's my favorite chopper. It's got like a teardrop long tank. It's really
cool. Is the one that's got the big long steering arms, right?
A huge raked out springer, and it's got an insane amount of torque too. It's got a twin in it. It's about 1500 cc.
Wow.
And it's awesome. It was built by a fantastic fella out in Alberta named Colin. I don't know if they build anymore, but Underground Choppers. And I tell you, this guy, he's the bike guy. I mean, it's the real deal. But anyway, it's so insane. It's super loud, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, if you're a rider, you really dig it. But that Springer is so... It's a law of averages when you're going on the road. Remember you used to drive like a big... Lincoln, like a 76 or even any of those cars, are just big boats, and they just kind of, you'd aim for your lane, but you'd take the whole thing because you'd kind of float.
They would float. That's a good description. Yep.
Yeah, that's what a rake Springer is all about. Cause it's kind of like, you know, this is my lane, kind of. You know, when you go to point and shoot for turning, I mean, it does what you want it to do, but when you're just cruising, it's kind of doing its thing, man.
I think you got to say it, you got to play with the bad grammar and say, this is my lanes.
This is my lanes right here.
And play the bad grammar on purpose.
That's it's a southern thing. But, you know, we've had that bike all over the world. We did, not over the world, I should say, all over North America. But when we lived in Nashville, it was all over the place there. I'd take it all through Tennessee. We flew it out to Las Vegas to be part of the Montgomery Gentry ride they have there during the ACMs every year. So.
Yeah.
I think I've got a permanent burn on this one arm because of the Vegas sun. It was off the hook hot. And then I've ridden it quite a few places around Ontario here as well. And it's just a constant.
Love it. Roadhammers, back at it, EP. Are you back at it yet? Or are you still on standby?
We're standing on go, man. You know, it's different. It's a 6-song EP. It debuted at number 2 on the charts, which is awesome. We're so happy. That we've done a few shows already, mainly in the West, of course. They're in a different position than us right now. I mean, we did the Stampede. We played Clay's hometown of Bonnyville. We were just out in Edmonton playing the Together Again Festival, Dean Brody and Jess Moskaluk. And it was just a lot of fun. But it's not full on again yet, right? You know, like we're getting ready to play Hastings, Crooks Rapids Country Fest. That's September 4. That's going to be a big show for us, especially here in Ontario, because they're really going for it, you know?
Yeah.
And with all the proper protocols, it's great. September 11, I'm playing a show, a solo show in Collingwood. It's Country Cares, and tons of great artists on that as well. So we're seeing these shows, but we're still not back to the, you know, 20,000 people in a field kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's coming.
And how does it feel? I mean, you talk about Jess and Clayton Bellamy and all those guys. You know, that really is getting the band back together. The one thing about country music that I've learned in this country is your band is your band, but the band really is the collective group of the industry folks. I mean, that really is getting the band back together. How does it feel to be able to see some of those people that you haven't been able to see? Not necessarily the ones that you work with every day, but you normally would run into backstage on your... On the travels.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what happened this weekend past. I mean, you're seeing the videographers that we know, and seeing our guy Sean on video. It was great. TJ, who was our guitar tech at one time, he's working with Jess, actually, on that show. So as soon as we pulled up, he was the first guy I saw. And, you know, it's like you see him on the internet, you know, Facebook or whatever, and you see what he's up to with his kids and that, but see them in person. It's like time never passed, you know. Seeing our friends, Ian, who was on sound for, I think he was on sound for Jess as well. You know, these kind of things are, it's like an extended family. So everywhere we go as musicians, there's that backstage family that you kind of have second and third homes all over the world, really. But beyond that, there's those familiar faces in the crowd too. You know, when you've been doing this as long as we have, you see the super fans who are out at all the shows, and you know, they're the ones that are first there in line for autographs or for merch, you know, to say hi. You see them posting the pictures first online, and to see those people in person and give them a high five, and you know, it feels like we're getting back to normal. We're not there yet, but it is coming.
All right, so back at it. Is there a preferred song? I mean, I can play The Boys Are Back At It. That to me would probably be the default go-to from the new EP, but yeah. Is there a Jason McCoy secret favorite child on this one that we should play instead?
Oh, got a few of them. I mean, you know what's interesting about the EP is there was a lot of hard drive favorites on it, like Giver. I wrote that with Tim Hicks 7 years ago. I was just sitting on the hard drive, and I really liked it, but I never pitched it to anybody. I played it for the label one day. I was like, oh, we really like that. I was like, really? So it seemed like it was more of a snowboarding commercial or something like that to me, but it really is a hammer song. And not only that, they made it the current single, so that's one of my favorites. Same with Hillbilly Disco, Megan Patrick's on it. It was just sitting there. It was kind of a guilty pleasure for years, just sitting there. We wrote it on the Bands on the Run tour with Blackjack Billy, and when we were out with Doc Walker and all that, and it's just been sitting there, and it's came to the top, pitched it, boom, it's going to be a single too. So
It's an amazing diverse circle of friends, isn't it? Between Tim and Megan, and you got Megan, who's like this avid hunter, and Tim, who's this Jamaican food loving, go hard with music kind of guy. Like, it's awesome. It's amazing.
It's just like life, you know. You get this circle of friends around you, and people come in and out of your life, kind of like, you know, just like you know, different seasons. And it's nice when you can see them on the road. It's just it's pretty interesting nomadic life, you know. We feel like pirates on the highway, and you run into another ship of fools and say hey.
I love it. Jason McCoy and the Roadhammers, thanks for sharing a little piece of your life with us today, Jason. It's great to see your face again, brother.
Oh man, it's great to see you, and I can't wait to see you in person, and pass on a big hey to Jody for me. And again, you know, seeing all our friends in the crowd or on stage or behind the mic, it's just it's a real treat. What a great life.
It's the Shift Podcast.
It's time for the World of Weird Things.
Welcome to the World of Weird Things with Greg Fish.
Fishy.
How's it going?
Wonderful. Thank you, sir. Worldofweirdthings.com. How are you doing?
I'm doing.
Yeah. We've got an interesting topic here on the blog from worldofweirdthings.com today. about the pandemic. It's Good News Tuesday, Fish. We're going to do good news. It's got to be good news. Tell me, you have some sort of good news here? Anything? Or is this just all bad news?
It's not completely bad. It's a mixed bag.
Weird news is very rarely good news, Fish.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that, but kind of our fault, you know, as people. So I can explain a little bit more detail. So here's...
Let me get the headline here first. One sec for you there, Fish. How anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers added years to the COVID pandemic is the headline. And now to explain, find us something good to come out of this, Fish.
So, okay, well, you know what? Let's start with the good news and keep going downwards. So the good news is that the pandemic will be over. From everything that scientists have seen, from everything that we know about coronaviruses, this will settle itself out. We are not going to, this is going to be, COVID's going to be with us forever at this point, but there's a very high likelihood that it's going to evolve in an equilibrium with us, where for the vast majority of us, it's going to be a nuisance. It's not going to threaten us the way that it does, still does today, much less threatened us before. That's the good news. The bad news is that it's now going to take a lot longer than it should have taken, because when we got the vaccines, there was a push. Let's vaccinate 70% of the population as quickly as we possibly can, because that's where we're pretty sure we had herd immunity. If we would have hit that goal, as we were on track to hit that goal in the summer, in both the United States and Canada, then we would have basically stopped the spread of COVID. We wouldn't have to wear masks, wouldn't have to worry about a lot of things. We could basically kind of return to our lives as normal. That was the plan. By the end of the year, we should have been fine. Unfortunately, some people decided that we're not going to be doing that. And instead, we're going to plant fear and we're going to plant doubt, and we're going to go to school board meetings and threaten teachers and superintendents and officials with violence if they adopted mask mandates. We were going to try and undermine vaccination efforts. We were going to tell people to take horse dewormer instead of, you know, actual medicine, or just get a vaccine. And all of that combined, along with the evolution of the Delta variant, has really kind of set us back. So we're looking at least another 3 to 5 years where we're going to have to actively suppress the pandemic through vaccinations and booster shots. So now booster shots have become an inevitability much faster than we thought they would be. We thought, well, every year or so, we're going to get a booster. But in reality, it looks like we're going to be looking at every 6 to 9 months with different formulations for different strains, because the virus is still evolving. And the more people get it, the faster it evolves. And with the cases being back on the rise in the United States and Canada, and some places in the United States completely out of control, with governors basically blocking every single possible way that we could slow it down, it's really not looking great. So now what we're essentially trying to do is we're trying to keep vaccinating so we stay enough on top of the virus. Especially people who are immunocompromised, especially people who are older, because as we get older, our immune system gets worse and worse and worse. Like after 60, there's a lot of wear and tear on it, and antibodies live a lot shorter than someone who's younger and stronger. So what's going to end up happening is we're still going to get all these new variants. We're going to try and keep on top of them, and then we're just going to hope that, because like most coronaviruses, this particular strain that causes COVID is going to kind of evolve into something that's much more benign than it is today. We're going to be able to build up enough antibodies through vaccination, through exposure in the wild, so we can actually have some active defenses against it.
Now, that makes sense. Although I did need to correct one thing. Ivermectin, which is the horse deworming drug, is a legitimate human drug and dosage that is prescribed to humans in many cases. Just through the way you said it, I want to clarify the information for everyone else. But you have to go to a doctor to get it. The reason why people are going and buying it, the horse dose, is because then you don't have to go to the doctor. Now, why would you go buy the horse dose and not go to your doctor because the doctor's not going to give it to you around COVID. So just to be clear that there is a version of it for the people, this is not the version of it for the people. Just want to pass that on, make sure that we're clear.
No, that is absolutely right. And I definitely did want to clarify that going further. Wanted that little rhetorical flourish. But yes, it is an antiparasitic that does have legitimate medical uses in humans under the right formulations, but it's an antiparasitic. It's not an antiviral. What you need is an antiviral. That's kind of, you know, that we should know that. Like, we shouldn't have to tell people you don't take antibiotics, you don't take anti-malarial drugs, you don't take antiparasitics for a virus, because that's just not how it works. So that kind of brings us to the other problem of why are people resisting this, like, really basic, all these really basic precautions? Because, you know, let's think about this. This is a virus. The virus doesn't care who you are, what your political beliefs are, who you vote for. It looks at you pretty much the same way that you would look at your favorite donut at Tim Hortons. Like, you're just fuel for it, nothing else. So you would think something that has absolutely no, it's just a force of nature, really. Why don't we want to band together and defeat it? And that's really the big question that a lot of people are really struggling with, and are trying to figure out, how do we approach people who are right now actively making things worse with spreading fear, with spreading doubt, with spreading lies, with spreading hesitation to get vaccinated? There's a lot of different explanations, but really they boil down to, there's a certain strain of people who cannot stand the fact that they don't have that agency to decide what they want to do, when they want to do it, even if it's something that is life and death. You know, they have that psychology. If nobody tells me what to do except me, and if you tell me what I wanted, if you tell me to do something that I already wanted to do in the first place, now I'm not going to do it, because that shows my freedom. Why they want to do that can be different, because in some cases they may not have a lot of power. They don't feel like they have a lot of power and agency in their daily life, so this is how they assert their agency. In other cases, they are control freaks. In other cases, they are just, you know, let's be honest, some of these people are just bad people. Like, they want to watch the world burn. Like, that's just their psychology.
Some people think it's funny. Some people post things online that I took this and it worked, just because they want to watch it happen. It's kind of like the Tide Pods thing, right? There, all of these challenges on YouTube were sort of the same, in that they didn't really take the Tide Pods. They faked it, put it on YouTube, got a bunch of clicks, and then a bunch of little kids tried to do it. So there are all kinds of bait and switch mechanisms and videos that are out there to do that. Now, Fish, for the sake of debate and discussion here, you're assuming that the Western world is the only bubble here. One could say that we would be better off if we didn't go for third doses, if we didn't even go for second doses, and we allowed the whole world to get one dose, as opposed to the areas of the world that have none. Your theory that says that all of the variants come from this sort of perpetuation of the growth cycle of the bugs, it would still happen in these places that have no access, like third world countries, to a regular steady supply. So even though that in the Western world, even if everybody got vaccinated, COVID would still be growing and mutating in other parts of the world.
This is true. However, there's a couple caveats. First and foremost, if you, at this point, it would take about 85 to 90% vaccination rate. But if the Western world is 85 to 90% vaccinated, COVID has a much harder time getting foothold in our bubble here. Likewise, what's going to happen is if we start getting lax on vaccine discipline anywhere, that is another place where new variants can evolve. Because let's remember, it's all over the globe. There's places where we definitely need to try and get a lot more control and a lot more vaccines, and that has to happen. But at the same time, if we also say, well, two doses is enough. We don't have to worry about a third dose. Let's just get everybody vaccinated with the first dose and then hopefully their second, then we'll see what happens. The consequence of that is that a lot of people will die because the variants are still going to be able to get out and get a foothold where we don't have enough vaccination, where we don't have enough exposure. You are essentially trying to say that when you're making that argument, the unspoken part of it is that we're willing to accept X many deaths here so we can prevent Y many deaths there. And I understand that there's a calculation that has to be made when we're dealing with pandemics, but this is not a very simple calculation to make. And it's not just a matter of some people have fewer vaccine doses. Some people have more, therefore we need to make it more fair. It doesn't quite work that way. It's not quite as simple. And really, honestly, we should be doing both. We should be boosting as much supply as we possibly can to places that are still struggling to vaccinate enough people while maintaining the protection levels of those who have been vaccinated.
I get it. I guess that I just can't help but look at the perspective of there seems to be this layer of attitude in our Western world. And I'm not saying with you, I'm just saying sort of this underlying attitude that as long as the deaths don't happen here, we're okay. And
Absolutely not.
You don't think that that's an underlying thing? Because in all of the vaccine conversation has been, you know, we do ours first and protect our health systems and everything else, which I would agree with. And those other countries are going to have to fend for themselves. Yes. Okay. Well, that's just, you know, harsh, right? It's harsh. It's reality if the government can't do it. But at what point do, you know, third level, very, very good coverage where we are benefit us in the long run if a little bit of coverage is dished out elsewhere before everyone's done where we are?
That's a very complicated calculation. There's a lot of epidemiologists and doctors scratching their heads to figure out that one, to be perfectly fair. And you're absolutely correct. There's definitely people who have the attitude of, well, if the death is somewhere else, that's not going to bother us, to which my counterpoint is Delta. Delta came from India when their system effectively almost collapsed under the weight of COVID cases. Outbreaks over there will make it over here. That's just a certainty. It's going to happen. Unless we completely seal every single border on Earth, it's just going to happen.
Oh, that's true. It's a very good reminder that the world is an incredibly small place and not to be forgotten. That it is, and it can't, you know, I mean, this is the reality. So now so many people have been so desperate for a solution. So what do you see in that desperation here? Because you know, before we wrap it up, the conversation about anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers adding years to the pandemic, what do you see in sort of the panic around the world? Because there's the sort of this panic piece, and then there's the desperate for info piece, and oh God, this is out of control. I'll grab onto any piece of info I can find.
Well, it really does come down to two very important things. First of all is critical thinking. We all have to be working on our critical thinking, because one of the biggest problems that we encounter today is that with social media, during a time of crisis, there's a lot of people who are happy to sell us whatever it is that we want to hear. Maybe some people do want to hear outrage and they want to, you know, imagine themselves as like being able to, you know, get into this Mad Max world where they'll be, you know, Immortan Joe and be, you know, warlords of the desert, you know, getting their finest bondage gear ready and polished. There's other people who want to hope that, you know, they can just go to a veterinary store and get a version of an antiparasitic that will magically cure their COVID. You have all sorts of different views that are being served by social media with no regard whether it's correct or not. So we really need to exercise critical thinking, because there's people waiting to take advantage of us. And that's really important. The other concern is that we need to be much more discerning in the politicians who we vote into office at every level. there are a lot of places where local decisions can make a huge difference between maintaining maintaining a sane caseload and letting that caseload explode. And we need to make sure that we're voting for people who are reasonable, who actually want to be in public service, who are not using a crisis to get ahead or tell us what we want or lead some sort of a revolutionary movement for people who are bored and looking for a purpose and for something to fight. And then finally, and most importantly, we need to remember that, you know, no person is an island. And I don't say that from, you know, some sort of a very high-minded standpoint. I say it from a very selfish standpoint. I'm surrounded by people. If the people around me don't do well, if the people around me are sick, I'm not going to do well and I'm going to end up getting sick or I'm going to become a target for them. And that's the case for everybody. You know, we don't live in family packs. We don't live in small isolated tribes. We live in modern advanced civilizations that have millions and millions of people in them. We have to interact with each other. We have to watch out for another. There's an argument to be made of how much we have to do it. There's definitely a lot of debates about what should be tackled by the community versus what should be tackled by an individual. And we can have all those debates. But for something as basic as there's a pandemic out there and people are getting sick, it should be pretty evident that we want everybody, or at least as many people as possible, to survive. We want everybody to be practicing good hygiene. We want everybody wearing masks and washing their hands until this is over and getting their vaccinations, because the virus doesn't care about our posturing. It's just going to kill us if we don't do anything about it. So those are really the three key steps: critical thinking, making sure that we have, that we think of our communities and what's going to happen to those around us, and very importantly, making sure that those who we choose to lead us, those who we choose to administer our laws and policies, get that and understand that we're trying to maintain a healthy society here.
It's an interesting conversation, wordofweirdthings.com. Frankly, Greg, I think that your points lead more towards an argument of technology sharing in regards to vaccines, because some of the vaccines in the world that are being distributed are way less effective than others. And so that could be a thing as well. So it's interesting. Thanks so much, Greg.
We have to waive the IP rights for vaccines. We just have to.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of standards things to that conversation too, but maybe that's another one for another day. Greg Fish, worldofweirdthings.com. Thank you, brother.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Shift Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show and share with anyone you like. Get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CuriousCast.ca.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.